Yeah, my name is Ron Sokolsky, and I have been living in the United States for a long time, but presently I live in Canada. I live in the western part of Canada, a little island called Denman Island. And with Stephen Denifer of Free Radio Berkeley, I put together a book called Seizing the Airwaves. And so I have some contacts and ideas from people, the voices of people in the free radio movement all across North America.
Did you work a lot for free radios yourself, and could you give some, could you tell us a bit about that?
My main work with free radio was with a station in Illinois, in Springfield, Illinois, which has gone under many names over the years. Many people know it as Black Liberation Radio. It's presently called Human Rights Radio, and it's a station that's comes out of the African-American community in Springfield, and reaches everybody in that part of town because everything is segregated in terms of housing in the States, you know. And so its audience is the people of that community, and it's Bonacantaco's station. He and his community of people who are involved with it do radical programming and are interested in uplifting, you know, the consciousness of the people in the community. So it originally came out of a tenants' rights movement in the housing estate, a housing project. And I've been involved since the beginning with them. I don't live there any longer, but the station is still going on.
Could you tell us something in general about the present state of free radio in the United States? Has it become harder for free radios to exist, or are there still a lot of them?
There are still a lot of them. But there are some difficulties, and some of the difficulties are the usual ones of the government, the Federal Communications Commission, who regulates the airwaves in the United States, coming in and shutting down stations. These are low-watt stations, stations under 50 watts, or at least under 100 watts. And so that still happens, but one of the things that happened over the years was that the Federal Communications Commission decided that it would make low-watt radio something that could be licensed, and they called it low-power FM. And this was because of all the free radio stations that were on the air and demanding to be heard, and the government people got very scared of that, and they try to control it. They try to capture it, I think. The way I look at it is they tried to enclose it and keep it under their control. And so they put out this idea of low-power FM licensed stations that would be available. And many people in the free radio movement in the States were divided about that. They didn't know whether they wanted to apply for legal licenses and become licensed stations, or whether they would continue to be pirate stations because they would have no regulation from the government. And so there was a split in the movement. That happened about 2 years ago when that low-power FM initiative came about. And that, I think, was intentional. I think the government wanted to create that kind of a split. And so some people got concerned about wanting to be official licensed stations, and other people said, no, we don't want any part of that. As it turned out, the licenses that were granted were very few. In some ways, it was a hoax on the part of the government. They only gave maybe 50 licenses, and they had promised 500. And these licenses went typically to religious stations, to ham radio people, to radio hobbyists. Very few of them went to political stations or activist-oriented stations or even countercultural stations. So in some ways, Stephen Denifer and myself were very critical of this low-power FM when it was first offered, and I think it's proven to be the case that it was a way in which they divided people, and at the same time they continued to crack down on the stations that were illegal, and they used it more as their excuse to crack down on those stations because they were able to say, well, if people really want to be on the air, there's a licensing process, they can get these low-power licenses, what's their problem? And so some people started applying, but they never got anywhere with their applications, and in the meantime, the crackdown continued.
So what are the consequences for the radio station if it still goes on illegally? What is the fee, or can you get in prison for that? How is that in the United States?
The way it is in the United States is there's no one thing you can be sure of, but usually what happens is that the Federal Communications Commission will come to you when they find you and say, you know, you have to stop doing this. You have to cease and desist. Otherwise, we're going to fine you. Or otherwise, we're going to seize your equipment. And they come in and steal your transmitter and everything. They come in and take all that. That's typically what happens if people repeat, you know, and come back, even though they've been warned not to. What could happen, and very rarely happens, is that you get fined very large amounts of money, which could be as much as $10,000. You could be put in jail for several years. But that almost never happens. Although it could, they could decide to do that if they wanted to silence you. But typically, they're mainly interested in harassing you, keeping you off the air by keeping you afraid of the consequences of getting your equipment taken and getting something on your, you know, your record as breaking the law, and they just want to shut you down. That's mostly what they want to do. They typically won't throw you in jail, although that's always possible.
Is there like any organization in the United States between free radio stations who are organizing against this policy of the government that you know of?
Yeah, there are lots of organizations. I mean, there's a good website called Radio for All, which connects a lot of people together who are part of this movement. And a lot of the debate about what would happen with low-power FM happened on that website. People would, you know, write in and give their opinions of things. There's an association of low-power broadcasters as well in Berkeley. There are a number of people who network with one another informally and not so much a national organization, but sometimes regional, sometimes because they share an affinity or a common interest. So there's lots of that happens, but there's no one organization that represents everybody. It's, a variety of different networks.
Okay, that's very interesting to hear. The last question, I don't know how long you have been in Holland till now, but what is your impression of the free radio scene here? Do you have any impression about that?
Well, I've only been here about 10 days now, so I only have sketchy impressions, but, you know, we were very aware in the United States of some of the pioneering work that happened here in Holland and in Amsterdam and with the squat movement in relation to free radio. We're very aware of, you know, free radio and how it connects to all the different movements of resistance and how important that was. And I consider it an honor to be part of this, to be connected to the Dutch free radio movement in some small way. But I was on Radio 100 on Matthias' show, and, you know, that was a nice kind of thing, although it's now only through the Internet, and it doesn't happen on the air anymore, so we need to get back on the air, and that's, I think, ultimately what everybody's goal is, and that's why we're here today.
Hey, thank you very much.
Sure, my pleasure.